but worse if I was to drink it again. And that's real important for me to remember, you know. And what we have here is a spiritual program. In other words, we talk about God, you know. And you know what? I know today that there's a God. I know there's a power in the universe. I absolutely know. And I'll tell you why. One of the reasons I know that, one of the ways God proved himself to me, and it was, you know what, it talks in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the alcoholics of our type, there's a like a mental twist that precedes the first drink. In other words, I don't know about you, but before I would start drinking, I could never conjure up like the humiliating experiences or the terror that I'd encountered when I drank alcohol and used drugs. My mind would kind of go hazy, go on a drunk, or get real blank. And I encountered that in sobriety. I was working one day, and I was just in emotional pain, and I didn't really feel like drinking. I didn't feel like anything. My mind was just a blank. And I was walking towards the bar, and mentally I was drunk. I had the state of mind that precedes the first drink. And what happened to me was a thought was implanted in my mind. And what that thought was in the state that you're in, you better not go in there right now. And what I did was I took other action, and I drove up to John Springer's house. Just totally crazy, but you see, I got through that. I got through that state, and I was in a safe place. And that's real important for me. You know, that's important for me because that correlates with what's said in the book, and it says that we, and our lack of power is our dilemma, and the power must come from a power greater than ourselves. And so I know there's a God, because I haven't drank alcohol in a year and 8 months, you know. And every day for the last 3 years, I drank alcohol. And if you want to know about the insanity of alcoholism, I came home one day drunk to my father's apartment, and he was drunk in the bar. I just left him. And we'd been fighting over some money that he'd stolen off me to drink. And I called him up on the phone at this bar he was at and called him all kinds of names. And you know what? He came home and we continued to just fight, right? Just smash the place up. And he's Irish Catholic. He's 6 feet two. He's about 250 pounds and he won, you know. And, and the insanity of alcoholism is I left that apartment. And there was blood all over me, and my clothes were torn, and I was drunk. And you know what my reaction was? I went to a friend of mine's house and drank. I got drunk. That's alcoholism. That's the kind of things I do, you know. And I think there was something said around here recently that really got to me. You know, there was a couple of things said about the newcomers that were addressed to the newcomers by a couple of respected members of this group. They said, in effect, you need us more than we need you, and that kind of attitude. And I want to tell you, if you're new here tonight, that's bullshit. Because you know what? We need you. We're here to care for you, to love you, and to serve you. And that's what we're here for. You know that? That's because that attitude, that philosophy is not why I read when I read the big book. You know? We're here to care for you and serve you. And I believe, you know, the answer to alcoholism lies in the 12 steps of recovery. You know, it says the people that recover thoroughly follow our path. And you know what? The path is the 12 steps. If you work the 12 steps, you'll be comfortable and you won't have to drink. You know, and that's the answer we offer you if you're here today. And that's, and I worked the 12 steps and I'm working them again. And I know that no matter what goes on in my life, I have a solid foundation in the 12 steps. You know, and I won't have to drink alcohol and I can be comfortable as long as I'm prepared to work them. You know, and so we need you. And I think I've come to all this. I hear all this stuff in here, and all this stuff gets read, and I don't believe any of it, because you know what? All this kind of self-improvement crap that goes around, because I believe that Alcoholics Anonymous is love and service. That's what the 12 steps taught me. They enable me to love and serve, most of the time, my fellow man. Not necessarily just alcoholics, you know, but enable me to love and serve other people. And I never had that ability when I came here. You know, self-centeredness was the root of my problems, you know. And that's what they gave me. That's what they gave me. And I believe that's the basis of Alcoholics Anonymous, is love and service. That's how we grow and mature and get well. And that's just, it just seems to go round and round. The more you give, the more you'll get. It's a paradox, but I'll tell you, through experience, I know it's true. I'm happiest when I'm just totally involved in somebody else's problems. When they're just laying it on me, man, and I'm just firing back the solution. God, I'm just high as a kite. We went 12-step, the guy, the other night, and I tramped around in the rain at San Jose State, and I don't know how he felt at the end of the night, but I slept comfortably. I felt wonderful, you know. And, well, that's the big book stuff, so I want to get into some of my own stuff now, if that's okay, you know. Johnny O will undoubtedly object all this, I don't know. There's a little guy called Sai Baba, who's this little Indian holy man. And he runs around India, and you know what he talks about? He said, I read this line, it just sprung out of me in this book I read. It said, God intoxication is better than drunkenness intoxication. You know, and I know that, man, because a lot of the time these days, I'm just going, you know, I'm rolling, man. and doing all the things I do, you know. And I think that's wonderful. I'm into all of that, you know. I love it, you know. And the guy, you know, all my life as a practicing alcoholic, I had people tell me, you know what, you're real intelligent, you have potential. What's his name? Peanuts and Charlie Brown, the little guy. God, he said something real profound one time. He said that there is no burden greater than a great potential. And that's true. You know, I hate that. You know, having potential, there's nothing worse. So what I'm trying to learn how to do is to be a doer. I want to be a doer. You know, I believe that the only true intelligence is intelligence that comes, the natural intelligence that comes from experience. You know, I got to stay in the realm of my own experience. You know, because I'll tell you, I can go off into all the philosophies and all of that stuff, and it doesn't work until I've experienced it. You know, until I've actually gone through that thing, then I can share it with somebody else. You know, I had a great habit around here of sharing with newcomers, just coming off this spacey spiritual hilltop, you know, of, you know what, just profound spiritual truths, and it was way out of my experience. I was talking happy horse shit, it was what it was. So it's important for me to stay in my own experience, just to share that. You know what I have to give a newcomer tonight? I have my own experience with drugs and alcohol, and the solution through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm going to read something just to finish up. This was read by Jerry W. at a meeting one night, and it just blew me away. I think this is great. This is called Karma Commandments, or Angel Stuff. And it's number one. People are unreasonable, illogical, and self-centered. Love them anyway. Two. If you do good, people will accuse you of selfish, ulterior motives. Do good anyway. 3. If you are successful, you will win false friends and true enemies. Succeed anyway. 4. The good you do today will be forgotten tomorrow. Do good anyway. 5. Honesty and frankness make you vulnerable. Be honest and frank anyway. The biggest man with the biggest ideas can be shot down by the smallest man with the smallest minds. Think big anyway. 7. People favor underdogs but follow only top dogs. Fight for some underdogs anyway. 8. What you spend years building may be destroyed overnight. Build anyway. 9. People really need help but may attack you if you help them. Help people anyway. It's going on a bit. Hang with me. One more. 10. Give the world the best you have and you'll get kicked in the teeth. Give the world the best you've got anyway. God bless you. Thank you.
Introducing our main speaker for this evening, who is one of the original members of Saturday Night Live. And he's a hell of a person. I've worked with him a couple of times, and he's a great person to get along with. He's been a big help in my sobriety, and I'm sure many others. He moved up to San Francisco not too long ago, and I hear he's getting along fine up there. And I understand that at one time he went by the Little Gorilla. So I'll go along with that, and with that, I'll give you Mike P. from San Francisco.
Hello, everybody. My name is Mike, and I am an alcoholic. And be careful when you have fits of honesty who you talk to. That's what I call them sometimes. They just seem to come out in fits, and I tell little things to people, and they remember them. I think Niall kind of said it all. If you guys feel like I do, we could just head home, you know. I really do. I thought he was fantastic. I saw him when he walked in, and literally you couldn't hold a 30 or 40 second conversation with the guy. You know? That's really how it was, if anybody remembers him. And it's just incredible what this program will do for somebody. I suppose if I was going to sum it up, I imagine for me, the disease of alcoholism is a spiritual malady and Alcoholics Anonymous is a spiritual solution. And if there was one thing I had to say, that would probably be it. When I came around AA, for some reason it got through my head that the solution I was going to have to find was a spiritual solution if I was going to stay free from alcohol and drugs. And I got hooked into that. And I've been hooked into it ever since I've been around here. You know, doing one thing or another, trying to find this spiritual solution to give me the thing inside that I need so I don't have to drink. And anybody who knows me knows that that's what I've done. You know, I bounce around. I've done a lot of things Niall does. I know Sai Baba. You know, and lots of things. But it has been a search. It's been a spiritual search. And what I have found is that there's nothing on a long-term basis that fills the void once you take away alcohol and drugs except a spiritual solution and a spiritual way of life. And fundamentally, that's what I live by. And I don't do it perfectly, and I got a lot to learn about it, but fundamentally, that's what I live by. And it works. And I didn't know about spiritual living. I didn't know about spiritual principles. I didn't know about you know, a lot of the things that are talked about in Alcoholics Anonymous until I got here. It doesn't mean that they didn't exist until I got here. It just means I never heard them until I got here. I was raised in a family that I would imagine had good moral values. As I look back, it seemed to. It was a very loving family. It was a good environment. You know, I was from upper middle class family. There was not alcoholism in my family, except for me. I wasn't abused or treated poorly. I got everything I ever needed through my life. And yet for some reason I became an alcoholic. So I can't, you know, I can't really blame it on anything back there. And at one time I wanted to blame it on something. And when I was in my teenage years, I wanted to say it's the parents. It's the authority figures in my life. If you just get out of my face, I'd be okay. And after a while, I came to the point where I couldn't say it was them anymore. And that's when I got sober. And I believe until I came to the point where I couldn't say it was them anymore, I never would have gotten sober. Because as long as I got an excuse for drinking, I'm going to drink. That's just how I am. You know, it doesn't matter if I want to do better or not. I wanted to do better for a long time, and I stayed drunk. You know, I started my first introductions to alcohol and drugs were, well, alcohol was when I was 9 years old. First time I got drunk. It wasn't the first time I drank it, but it was the first time I got drunk. And I liked it. You know, and I can remember the day, not vividly, because I don't remember a lot of my past vividly. I came in here without a memory, to tell you the truth. You know, the only thing I could remember when I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous was the major bad things that had happened in my life. You know, I can remember riding with my dad in the car a few months before I sobered up. And we'd been skiing together. I met him up in Lake Tahoe. And we were riding down to my grandparents' house. He said, why don't you come stay the night with us, and then tomorrow you can go back to where you're living. And as we were riding down, he was remembering little things like we used to play catch when we were little. You know, I was in baseball and stuff. And yeah, lots of things that dads do with sons when they're little. And he had this kind of neat glow about him talking about this stuff. And I looked at him. It was one of the few times I was honest with my father or anybody at that time when I was drinking. And I said, you know, I don't have one good memory. And he looked at me and he said, you're really sick. That's all he could say at that point. And it was the truth. You know, I came in here not with a lot of optimistic views. I didn't come in here with life looking grand. I came in here because I didn't have any place else to go is how I felt. Maybe I did, but I didn't feel like I had any place else to go. And I think that was important for me also. Because I believe I'm of the kind that if there's another way, I'm going to do it. That's just the way my head works, the way I motivate, the way my life has always worked. If I can get around the truth of a situation, I will. You know? And I did that as long as I could until I couldn't stand living with me or alcohol or drugs or any of that stuff. You know, and then I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I drank alcoholically from the gate, you know, from the first time when I was 9 that I can remember. And then I started really kind of drinking. About 13 was when I started drinking and using drugs pretty much on a daily basis. And it was the environment that I was raised in, and it was the way I felt comfortable. You know, if I was dating women or I was hanging out with the tough guys or the smart guys or the weak guys or whatever you want to call it, whatever crowd I was running with for the day, if I was loaded, I was better off. And that's it worked for me. I was one of those kind of teenagers that walked around with a head full of gloom, a head full of guilt, a head full of fear, a head full of I'm going to blow my brains out if it doesn't work right. I was a heavy-headed teenager, and yet I didn't look like it. And it wasn't because life was coming around me. It was just that's the way I approached life. Everything was heavy. And I didn't tell anybody about it. I didn't talk to anybody about it. It was just inside of me. And when I drank, that went away. That stuff inside of me went away. See, I had never, until I came to AA, I had never learned the tool of sharing with people. And I'd never learned the value of it. I was certain, yet I didn't think about it, but I was certain that if I told you what I thought and the way I felt, you wouldn't like me, you wouldn't want to be with me, or you'd go, bleh, you know? And I came to find out in Alcoholics Anonymous that's not true. But it was here that I found out because you guys told me, right? I didn't have to come in here and get honest with you. You guys got honest with me and allowed me to get honest for myself. And that's important. When I came to AA, nobody said there's any rules you got to follow. You know, and I have yet to run into a moralizing lecture in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, the only ones I've run into are the ones I've given to other people. You know? And I hate it when I do that, you know. I'm getting better at it. I don't like to have an answer to everything you say. Yeah, and that's getting better. But I came to AA at 20, and it was the second time I've been here. Somebody said they're a retread, and I could call myself a retread, but I don't think I could because I wasn't interested in getting sober the first time I was here. I came here when I was 18 as a result of a car accident in a blackout, one of many that I had because I used to have blackout drinking all the time. Most of the time, in fact. I lived in the Santa Cruz Mountains, and I'd drive up that hill 4 or 5 nights a week in a blackout. It's just the way I did my life. And I got in an accident. I wound up in a hospital, and Niall said something about the way he drank, and the way I drank was this, that I totaled the car, And luckily it didn't hurt the woman that I hit. But I went through the windshield and I went to the hospital. And I've been in construction, and it was during the summer, and I've been drinking vodka since I got on the job that morning. And it was kind of mid-afternoon. It was a Saturday we finished, and I was smashed. And I was just wearing cutoffs and a pair of work boots. Coming from the job, good tan, you know, summer, feeling good. Wrecked this car, and they took me into the hospital. And I raged around the hospital for half an hour, 45 minutes, saying, I want the best goddamn surgeon of all Santa Clara Valley to fix my fucking head, you know. This arrogant, rotten attitude, right? And people didn't want to have anything to do with me. You know, the guys in the emergency care room, I can remember some of their faces a little bit. They're going, what in the fuck's going on here? You know? And I just raged around. So they got this guy, and this guy was good. And he did my head. He put 60 stitches or 70 stitches in it and put a big bandana around my head. And what was important to me was the same thing that was important to Niall. Instead of calling my family or calling a relative or somebody to take care of me, take me home and bundle me up, I called a drinking buddy, and he came down and got me in his old Galaxy 500 that he and I had bought for a dollar, literally a dollar. And he came down and got me. I couldn't own it because I didn't have insurance. I was in that bracket where you can't be insured anymore. You know, they pull you out of the hat and all that stuff. Anyways, he came down and he gave me a T-shirt out of his trunk, an old greasy, rotten T-shirt. And we went off to the party that night. I had blood up and down my legs. I had a greasy T-shirt on and this bandana around me, and I felt righteous, you know. I did. I strutted into that party just full of it. Look at that. And then all this attitude and stuff. And I've never been tough, but I wanted to be a Hell's Angel for a few years. And I'm glad I didn't do it, you know. I don't have any tattoos to remove like friends of mine. But anyways, that's just the way I was. You know, if I got in trouble, it was better. It was just the best thing I could do is if I could just stay in a stupor and not deal with it. You know, and if you're an alcoholic of my type, you've always been very good at putting on a good front and keeping things together and saying the right things to the right people. So when I came when I was 18, as a result of this situation, I was not interested in sobering up. So I don't know if I can say I'm a retread. I didn't give the program a try. I came to meetings at St. Luke's in Los Gatos, one meeting a week for 4 weeks. The first meeting I was there, I had this bandana around my head, and I came in right as the meeting started, and there was a beautiful girl with long brunette hair sitting there, and she'd been sober a few months, and that was it, you know? That's all I wanted. I just wanted to meet her and go talk about AA or whatever, you know? And I came back the next 3 or 4 weeks to talk to her, not to go to the meetings, and I'd sit through the meetings, and they talked about steps like Niall talked about, and they talk about this loving power and God, and they talked about a lot of stuff, and I didn't understand it. It was interesting, but it didn't have anything to do with me because I didn't want what they had. Right? I could think of a million reasons why I was different. And the only reason I was there to be a chameleon, once again, to get life off my back. And I've always been good at getting life off my back. The problem is that I never had the tools to live a life so life doesn't keep getting on your back, if that makes any sense. Right? I mean, I had a cycle that was about a 6-week cycle. I'd get my life together, get things organized, get a car that was running, get the right attitude, get everything squared away, get all the people in line, and then I'd screw up, you know? And it'd all fall down around me, and I'd either have to move, or I'd have to change my MO, or apologize profusely to people I didn't give a shit about, you know? And I did a lot of that stuff, and I hope it's making some sense, but that's just kind of the way I went, you know? I just flew around in this world. And I didn't have any conception of who I was or why I was doing the things I was doing, you know? As I sit in sobriety and I look back, I can tell you what I felt a lot of times. But I sure as hell couldn't tell you when I was there. You know, I just did what I thought I needed to do. And I didn't even think about doing what I thought I needed to do. I just did it. That's just the way it went, you know. And so so anyways, after 4 or 5 meetings, this girl and I hit it off great. She wound up getting drunk. We both got drunk and you know, and I never had to make amends to her for that because I realized today that I don't get anybody drunk and I don't get anybody sober. And that's the facts, you know. And if you're going to walk out of the room and say those sons of bitches didn't give me what I wanted, I'll go get drunk, then that's your business, you know. Likewise, if somebody gives you razz around Alcoholics Anonymous, you can tell them to stick it in their ear, you're going to stay sober, period. You know, I know a lot of guys who've been retreads. And you just tell them, just blow it out your ass. I'm going to sit here as long as I want to sit here, you know, because all it says is you got a desire to stay sober. Doesn't matter if you're perfect or any of that stuff, because there's not a lot that come. Well, that's not fair, but there's not everybody who comes here stays sober the first time they come. You know? Anyways, I stayed sober for about 4 months, and what I did after these 4 or 5 meetings is I kept using dope, and I just switched over to drugs, because drugs and alcohol went the same for me. I'm an alcoholic, and it includes drugs, it includes anything. I just abuse whatever I take. You know, I got to watch out with aspirin, literally. I mean, it says in the bottle, take 2 aspirin. I take 3, period. That's just how it works, you know. And I'm okay with that because I don't get wasted on it. It doesn't affect my life, you know, so it's all right. Like Johnny said one time, smoking's a non-fatal addiction. I loved it, you know. You don't have to get righteous overnight. But anyways, I didn't drink for about 4 months, and I used a lot of drugs. And when I use drugs, I don't have blackouts. I don't have a mood swing that I turn into a loud, belligerent, crummy kind of guy. I don't turn to Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. You know, I don't do that kind of stuff when I use drugs. So my life got together. I got a new car. I remembered where I was the days before. I was saying the right things, keeping a pretty clean image, keeping all of my stuff stacked in this little tin card house or whatever people talk about, just all piled up perfectly. You know, always having to play the role of the organizing people, manipulating things to keep it just right, you know, because if it wasn't, I was going to be messed up. And that's the way I lived, just all the time, screwing with this, adjusting the television, as Carney says. And it's a lot of work. If you know what I'm talking about, you know it's just a lot of work, you know, and you got to get drunk now and again to get away from it. And I wound up having a dinner with a girl that I was dating. So I was dating another girl now, and I was saying the right things to her, and I'd grown a beard, and, you know, I was making all these nice changes. And the family life was good at home because I hadn't been coming home drunk, and my parents knew that I was going to come home when I left. And so they weren't so edgy because our home was really weird as a result of me drinking. It wasn't weird because my parents were weird. It was that they never knew what was going to come home to them. I'd come home sometimes in a blackout, in a rage, threatening to hurt people and chasing people around the house. Other days I'd come home as this jolly, friendly, nice guy, you know. They just didn't know. And so it was usually really rocky around the house. A lot of that had settled out, and I was dating this girl, and she invited me over for the big dinner to meet the parents. And I was 18, I guess, and she was in college. And so we went over anyways for this dinner. And I hadn't met them. And always in those kind of situations, I've never been really good at first meetings with people. I've always been real uptight and real self-centered and into me and how I'm going to perform and all that stuff, right? And so we sat down, we started talking. They had a bottle of Blue Nun. I remember it vividly. You know, sitting there, just a nice little bottle. And they said, would you like a glass of wine? And I said, yes, yes, I'll have a glass of wine. And I did. They poured me a glass of wine, and we had a 4-hour dinner or whatever it was. And I drank one glass of wine. I sipped it appropriately, and I shook it, and I looked at it. I did all that stuff. And I really did, you know, kind of a little smell and everything. It's funny, isn't it, Jesus? But anyways, and I said all the right things, and I talked about a bunch of stuff that I've never been interested in, like presidents and politics and all that stuff. I've just never have been motivated by that, but I did it, right? You know the thing, if you just say the right things to the right people so you get by, you know? And I did. And 3 days later, I was breaking into their house stealing their booze. I was back into my same old MO in 3 days, you know? And a week or two later, this lady broke up with me, and I had another thing. Oh, God, poor me, you know? And I was going over to her house after a bottle of VO every night, you know, calling her by the wrong name and all this stuff, you know? And that's why she broke up with me. It wasn't because, you know, I don't know what I thought it was. And I wrote her one of these long, forlorn letters of all this crap, you know? I'll wait for you always, and I love you so much. You know that bullshit? And it's just bullshit, you know? But I did it, and I can remember. Oh God, we can get some good ones going. I remember going and talking to my sister. I was still living at home at this time, and I said, "Pam," Sam's my sister. She's not an alcoholic. She's a beautiful lady. She hated my guts when I was drinking. But I said, "This lady, she's dumped me. Oh, I'm so heartbroken." And I gave her the letter. Right, I knew it said the right things, because you know how to say the right things to get the right people in the right way. And I gave it to her, and she just got all teary. And my poor little brother, and oh, all this stuff. It's just what I wanted, you know. Yeah. And I don't get to play those anymore. All right? That's part of the message I want to say to you. Right? I mean, I can, but I know what I'm doing. And so I choose not to play them most of the time. Because that kind of stuff's not conducive to my serenity, my comfort, to my relationship with other people. But that's what I did anyways. And so I started on my last drink, which was a year and a half. And I made some geographics. I lived in Santa Cruz, and I tried the MO of the Birkenstocks and long hair and singing and playing guitar on the beach. And that didn't fit too well because I'd get too loose for all those people. They're pretty serene. And, oh, there's other stuff. We could go on for a while if you wanted, but it's just all part of the same scene. No, you don't want to hear. I'll tell you that one in private, Jerry. But I did that. Anyways, I did that stuff, and I started out. It was always the same thing. I would start out good with a group of people, and I'd get my image together, and I'd get the right things together, and I'd play it right and try and organize life. You know, it talks in our book about the actor, the director, and all that stuff, organizing the stage. And I did that all the time. It's the way I lived, you know. And I didn't know that that's the way I lived. I just did it. And so I moved from there, and I made my last geographic. And my last one was the Lake Tahoe. I always had a dream that if I go to Lake Tahoe and I ski all winter long and I have all the drugs and alcohol I need and I don't have to work, then I'll be okay. And I did it. And I moved up there, and there was four of us living in a house. And I can remember, this tells you a little bit about what was going on in Mike that he wasn't aware of. I moved in a house with two ladies and another guy. There was four of us living in a house. And I had a season's pass so I could ski every day. I didn't have to work. Had enough money. Had all the stuff. And the first 2 weeks went well. You know, I'd taken my own pound of dope up with me. I had my own cocaine, and I had all the booze I wanted. And I was doing just fine. And the second week, they had a party. And I didn't want to go to the party because I knew what I'd do. You know, and I was afraid of the party, you know, in a sense. It's a funny kind of thing that went on because I wasn't sure what I was going to do, and I didn't like what I did a lot of times. So I woke up the next morning after a blackout full of guilt. Hi, good to see you. And all the stuff that you wake up with. And, you know, and it was one of those mornings where I didn't want to see the people that I lived with. I sure as hell didn't want to hear about what I'd done the night before. And I had a lot of those mornings, you know. I just didn't want you to talk to me and tell me what I'd been doing, you know. Every part of me wanted to know, if you know what I mean. You want to know everything that happened, but you can't ask anybody. And you just sit there, and you're trying to read their faces, and you get good at reading people. Really. And I went out in the kitchen, and I read them. And I read them, and I knew I screwed up, right? I mean, it's pretty easy to read that stuff. And as it turned out, you know, I'd gotten in a drunken stupor and made a fool out of myself. But one thing they did say that was powerful to me, and I think about it in sobriety now, is that they said about 12 o'clock you went into the bathroom with the bathroom door open and you looked in the mirror and you said, my God, what in the hell's happened to you? Right? And that's the kind of guy that was living inside that I was not aware of. I had no touch with him. Right? It was the guy who snuck out when he was drunk. And I wasn't the guy who snuck out and slobbered and cried a lot. I was the guy who snuck out and fought because I hated me so much. It was just the way I did things. And so I made a move out of that house. They all left. They didn't leave because of me. They left. On their own lives. And I moved into another house in Lake Tahoe again where I didn't have to pay any rent now. I had all the other things still in my life. Lived in a beautiful little cabin. You know, I had a wood-burning stove, all those romantic kind of things that are really going to, you know, make you manly and out in the woods and all that stuff. And I was doing it, right? And the guy that I was living with after about 2 weeks, he had a broken neck. He's an alcoholic too. Fell off a handrail doing a handstand in a drunken stupor, right? I mean, that's the kind of stuff that happens to alkies. And we don't die. We just sit around with neck casts on. You know? It's true. You know? People say that we're going to, you know, probably we'll be the kind that get to be 65 or 70 sitting behind an old fence out on a highway puking our guts out. And I think that's probably more the MO for me because I should have been dead a lot of times and I never died. You know? I probably would have just kept going on. You know? And that's a scary thing when I relate to it today because I didn't like it. But I didn't know another way. Anyways, he left, and I could drink like I wanted to. I could get up in the morning, and I could drink my vodka right when I got out of bed, and I could go do my day on the slopes. And by the way, I never skied without getting loaded. I mean, I didn't do things without getting loaded. It's just what I did. I didn't do anything new unless it entailed drinking. Everything surrounded around drinking and using drugs. And that seemed just fine with me. It seemed that's the way it should go. It was working. I enjoyed it, you know, for a long time. And one morning, something happened. And I can't tell you what it was, but something different happened to me. I woke up at 6 o'clock in the morning after a wine night by myself. And I was downstairs again. I hadn't made it to bed. And I was having the DTs. And I've never had hallucinations. I used to just get the whips like this. And I was, you know, in a little ball. It was about 6, and I was doing that. And I was sure that the night before I screwed up again. And I thought realistically that I was kind of safe because I lived out away from a lot of other people and I wasn't doing anything with anybody anymore. I didn't have friends that I ran with because they were just a pain, you know. I mean, they are. If you want to drink and get it on, it's a hassle having other people around, you know. And so I didn't have them. I didn't mind it. I didn't think I minded, at least. And what had happened, as I found out later, so I found out I'd gone next door, raised hell with the neighbor to try and get my car started. I had a Dodge Coronet at this time, $250 car. It was a beauty. Had one headlight, the driver's door wouldn't open, the broken windshield on it, and a broken side window on it. You know, and that was, and two motor mounts out of three in it. And that was just, you know, that was my car. I was kind of proud of it for some reason. It was. I don't know. It's a weird kind of stuff, you know, it goes on. And anyways, what happened is this morning it was different. And that's what's so profound to me. And, you know, for the new people, if it's different, stick with it. Don't fuck it up, you know. Just stick around here long enough and let it really settle in. Because something was different. And I wanted to get sober more than anything, right? More than jobs, money, cars, houses, friends, anything. And I'm glad it happened. And I can't tell you how it happened. It just was there. And once that happened, I didn't get sober straight away. It was a week and a half before I actually got off the booze. But I was going to get sober and there was nothing going to stop me. And I don't know how to tell you what happened inside, but it was there. And I don't know if I talked to a God or what I did, but I knew that I was living in Tahoe and finally people had written me off slowly. My father had written me off about 16. He couldn't deal with me emotionally anymore. It hurt too much. I thought he was a bastard, and it wasn't that way. He just couldn't handle me, right? And my sister had written me off a year or so before that. The only one I had left was my mother. And most alkies have a good mother or a good father or somebody who picks up after them all the time, you know? And this one had picked up for me for a long time. And she stopped picking up for me before I sobered up. And I think it was part of the reason I did. Is she said, as I came home in a drunk out from Lake Tahoe, or a blackout from Lake Tahoe, $80 taxi fare from San Francisco to the Santa Cruz Mountains that I don't remember. And the next morning, I guess I went to cook that night too, now that I think of it. I used to do that periodically, and I almost burned down the kitchen. You know, I fell asleep or passed out or something with this stuff cooking. Anyways, the next morning she said, "We love you, but I can't stand seeing you anymore because it hurts too much." She said, "Until you're ready to do something, don't come around." And it was probably the best thing that she ever did for me. And I've told her that since I sobered up. But she had said, "Until you're ready to do something, don't come around." But I knew that if I was ready to do something, I could come around. And I came down out of Lake Tahoe. And the way I came down out of Lake Tahoe, even though I had this commitment inside, is I drove to my grandparents' house to get $20, who live in Nevada City. I said it was for gas. $5 was for gas, $15 was for booze to get me to San Jose. So I got into San Jose, my car died in my parents' driveway, literally died. And I walked in and I said, "I'm ready to do something." You know, and they just about went through the roof, particularly my mother, because she just never really gave up inside. I found out my dad didn't, but he had to. I mean, that's just the way he dealt with it. And I said, they said, "Good, we've been looking for years for a place to send you." And, you know, I've been to psychiatrists and I've done a lot of the other stuff that people do. And the place that they talked about was Montevilla, which is down in Morgan Hill. And my mother said, we found out about this place. We can call them. We'll check it out tomorrow, see what happens. And my dad said, "We've got a construction job that I'm involved in right now. Will you put the foundation in for us before you go into this hospital? And it's going to be about a week." And I can remember the war my mother and father had in their house. My mother saying, "Don't make him do it. It'll change tomorrow." Because it always changed. I'd wake up with these great things. Like in the morning when I wake up and say, "I'm not going to do that anymore." And I'd be drunk that night again. And she was scared to death that it was going to change. And my dad said, "Son, you tell me. You know, is it going to change or isn't it?" And I said, "No, I'll go in there a week from now." So we called in. It was a Saturday that we set it up to go in. And I laid the foundation. And my last week was vodka, round the clock, and codeine. And I put the foundation in. It wasn't the best foundation I've ever put in. It was all wacky, you know. It worked out, but the house was a bitch to build on top of it because you have to build everything out of square all the way to the roof. And you do. But it worked, you know. And the guy that I was working for had never met me. You know, and I've always been a good worker. I think most alkies are good workers. You know, if they can just get all that other junk out of their way, I think they were good, motivated people. And I gave him a good day's pay, but he didn't know how to take me because I was into the heavy carpenter image and pounding around and trying to be tough and all this extra junk, you know. And he was just a carpenter. He wasn't interested in that stuff. And I was always loaded. My eyes are going off to the left. And let's put it together faster, faster, you know, because I was one of those speed freaks, too, when I used to work. You know, we used to eat orange or lemons, raw lemons like this, and bite them and look at each other and say, on the job. We did. That's why they called me the little gorilla. That's where that all comes from, right? And I've never been tough. I want to tell you that. I mean, I lost just about every fight I was in. And I've always said that it's better to be a good lover than a good fighter. But anyways, I went into this place. And what happened is that when I walked in the door, there was something different inside of me. That same thing hadn't changed. I knew I was going in at the end of the week. I couldn't stop on my own. If I had to go to the job without taking a drink, I wouldn't have gone to the job. So I just kept drinking until I went to that hospital. And they had a little locked door that goes behind you. It's not like you can't get out. You could just walk out the back door if you want, probably. But they do that, you know, I guess it's to give you security or something. I'm not sure what the reason is. But it closes behind you, and you're in this place. And, you know, I said to myself, I'm going to be honest. I'm going to be as honest as I can be. I can be level with these people. I'm going to ask for help. I'm going to try and learn. And I'd never done that before. You know, I'd never said to myself, I'm going to be honest. I'm going to ask you guys for help and try and use it. Right? If I asked you for help before I sobered up, I asked you for help just so you'd be my friend and you think I needed you, and then I'd use you to get what I wanted. That's exactly how it worked. You know? I wasn't interested in your guys thinking or what you wanted me to do. And I had traded off honesty a long time ago. You know, I traded a lot of things that were important to me. Honesty, dignity, self-respect, concern for other, love, compassion. You trade them when you drink. They just go. And they went for me, you know, one at a time, a little bit here, a little bit there, till you can't stand yourself, if you're like me. And, you know, they put you in a little detox place. And when she put me in there, the nurse came in, you know, and I had this great commitment to be honest. And this just tells you how we are. She said, when did you have your last drink? And I said, yesterday. And that wasn't the truth, you know. That was the best I could do. The last drink I'd had was that morning, you know. But I couldn't tell her. But all that means is that I can't expect to be all right in 1 hour or one commitment or one, you know, one decision. I have to keep making this decision and keep going, you know, internally, okay? Not to sobriety necessarily, but to growth and to a spiritual way of life. I got to keep making that decision. That's just for me. You know, I've committed to Alcoholics Anonymous, but to do that, I got to keep the other things going that are a part of my life. And that means more than just coming to meetings and sitting here. You know, a lot more than that. So in this place, you know, I had the whips and jangles for a while, and I had the little rashes break out on my hands, and I was nervous about looking at people in the eye. And the good thing about those places is that you're with a bunch of other people that are the same way, and it's helpful. It really is, you know, because you're sitting in a room and everybody's kind of doing that, and they're all nervous, and everybody's afraid of reading the fifth chapter like I was. I mean, the first time that I read it in one of those meetings, I was afraid I wasn't going to make it through. I was sure that my voice would crack and everybody start laughing and I have to throw it down and pound out of the room, you know. And it didn't happen that way. I made it through and nobody laughed and I shook and I said it, you know. And I guess that's part of the experience Niall talked about, is that I have the experience of living sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, by going through that kind of stuff, by going through your first relationship and it coming down around your ears and you say, I'm not going to drink and I'm going to get honest with somebody, I'm going to walk through it. You know, you just don't get drunk. And that's a whole different way of living than the way I did before. Because you didn't walk through anything. You walked around it or you drunk under it or whatever the right expression is. You just didn't deal with it. And anyways, I got out of that place. It was a 28-day program, and I met some of the most beautiful people in my life in that place. A guy named King, who's been in Alcoholics Anonymous probably 14 years now. Another lady who's here. And quite a few other people who came down to visit. In fact, I met my sponsor there. He came down, a lady who worked there, called up somebody else in AA and said, there's a young guy down here. Bring one of those young guys over and have him talk to this guy. That's the kind of stuff that happens in AA, you know. People take concern, like Niall was talking about. I mean, I didn't know what was going on. This guy just appeared, you know. And in fact, he tells me the story that when we met, I thought I was pretty nice and comfortable. And he said he asked me, you know, why I thought I was an alcoholic. And I said, see this goddamn scar, you know. I don't remember it. I don't. You know? But it was oozing out of me, you know. And people have told me that when I walked in, that there was a black cloud around my head. Literally. You know, that's what they saw, was a black cloud. And today they see light. You know. And we don't get to see those things. You know, as you're sobering up, you don't get to see them. Now and again, you run into somebody and you find out it's different. You go and you make your amends and somebody says, is this the same person I used to know? And you say, well, I guess so. You know, something's happened to me. You know, and something had happened to me. And it keeps happening. It's strange. I went back to see my friends when I sobered up. And I got out of the hospital. And I went to one of these parties. I was a month or two sober. And people say, don't go to old parties and slippery places. And I did that. I stayed out of most slippery places, but I went to one party with all my old friends. And I sat around that party, and they all got loaded, and I didn't get loaded, and it was the most boring thing I'd ever seen. You know? It really was. And I couldn't see what was there before. What was there was that everybody was getting screwed up, and they weren't interested in each other, right? I don't know what a social party is. I've never been to one. You know, I mean, in sobriety I have. I'll take that back. But before that, it was just a bunch of people get together to get wasted. You know? And if you talk good, if you don't, it doesn't matter. Just turn the music up and get blasted. You know? And that's what I saw that night. And I wasn't interested in it because I'd been coming to meetings. And I was interested in this stuff people were doing around these meetings. Stuff like Niall was talking about. And other people talk about at meetings. And this glow in their eye. You know, and this reality about what in the hell they were doing on a day-to-day basis. You know, people saying strange things, like, you know, somebody asks in a meeting, they say, how do you get honest? And the guy says, stop telling lies. Yeah, that's true. And that's the kind of stuff that works for me. If you're like me, you've always been vague, right? And you've always been lofty, and you've always been full of a lot of windy crap, right? And getting through that stuff is important, you know? Because as I keep digging through it, and I got a lot to dig through still, you know, it's not over. But as I keep digging through it, I get more comfortable, I get happier, and I have better relationships with my God and the people around me. Yeah? And it's taken time for that to happen, but it keeps getting better. The love Niall talked about, I know today. And it was 3 years before I saw that. A guy who's sitting right here in the front room, when I had my third year birthday, invited a bunch of people to Mountain Charlie's. He said, we'll go to dinner, you know, for your birthday. And I said, great, that's neat, let's go to dinner. And we're standing there outside, and these people start to show up. People like King and this lady that was here, Gail, and Alice and John Carney, and a bunch of other people that were people that I hung with when I sobered up. People that I used to walk around going, Jesus Christ, what do they mean? You know, because it'd just be so heavy. You know. And they weren't trying to be. They were just telling it the way it was. And that's heavy to somebody like me because I never saw it the way it was. And they were there. And about halfway through the dinner, I realized they were there because they loved me. You know, they didn't have to be there. They didn't. And it hit me so far down, something changed. And I have found that in AA, my experience has been is that it keeps going down. Right? And it hits another level. People talk about an onion being peeled. And my onion gets peeled. Right? I might like to peel it, but I don't seem to be able to peel it any faster than it's going to get peeled. You know? If that makes any sense. But it's like I don't understand God totally today because I'm not ready to understand Him totally. That's how simple it is. It's not because I'm less than or more than or anything else, but I'm right on time with what I'm supposed to know and where I'm supposed to be. You know? And I can't be there any faster, and I can't be any further behind than where I am right now. You know? And that's the way they talked about it in AA. And that makes sense to me. You know, I always had things that had to be this way or had to be that way. They say, well, it can be, you know, it can have to be any way you want it to be, but that has nothing to do with the way it is. Right? All right? You know? And either you're happy or you're bad or, you know, whatever. Get down to it, get through it, and get on with the business of living. You know? And people talked about this program being a program of getting rid of stuff. You know, I always thought I had to get something. If I could just learn the trick, I'd have it. Right? And people told me, you got the trick, get rid of the shit and you'll have it. Right? And I believe that's the truth. You know, I believe that everybody who's sitting here, and this is just my own stuff, you know, you can take it any way you want, but I believe you got everything. Anybody who's sitting in these chairs has absolutely everything. You know, and it's up to you to get it or not. You know? Like, nobody got me sober. And nobody stays sober for me. Right? And nobody keeps me sober. I mean, if you sit there and you pray for me all day, Mike stays sober, it's not going to have a goddamn thing to do unless I do something about it. You know, it's like nobody can work the 12 steps for me. And those things I just believe. And I don't think there's anybody in this room who knows more. Anybody in this room who's going to get a better AA program, you know? You don't have to do any of this stuff of measuring with other people, and I still do it, but it's useless. Right? All it does is just leave me feeling rotten. Right? Really. Because there's nobody who's got it more. Some people have learned more lessons and are further down the line, but it's the same line. And if I can learn from them, I better do it. You know, rather than sit back and say, I got all the stuff, you know, one day I'll wake up and I'll know it all and I'll be in that corner right there, you know, and then I'll come out of my corner and I'll lay it all on you. It doesn't work that way. You know? I've tried it. The only way is to me be out of the corner, involved in the scene. And then it comes tearing off sometimes, and it hurts sometimes, you know, when you got to wake up and you say, Jesus Christ, I'm full of spiritual pride and I'm 2 years sober. I should know better. Right? But I get full of it today still. You know, I just don't seem to go as long with it. And I don't seem to get as far off beat. The other night, 2 nights ago, we were riding home with this guy. 6 months sober, he's got all kinds of shit coming down his life. He's at the point where he's trying to make amends. And for a lot of people, making amends entails a lot of money. For me, it didn't because I wasn't very old, right? But for a lot of people, it entails a lot of money and a lot of work. And he's looking at it, scaring the hell out of him. And as he was trying to talk about what he felt and who he was and what he was dealing with in his life, I gave him a goddamn answer for everything he said. And I felt lousy about it when I left. And if you know what I'm talking about, then take it, you know, and do something different next time you're dealing with somebody. Because instead of adding to and letting somebody else learn their own lessons, you know, I was trying to jam some of my own garbage down his throat. And all that does is pile my little heap up over here in the corner so I can say, well, far fucking out, right? And that guy walks away thinking, hey, I don't know it anymore. You know, I must not be doing it right. And all that junk. And I don't want my actions to be doing that to other people. You know, what I'm coming to more and more is that I got to take care of my own side of the street, and I don't know what your side of the street entails. And if you're new and you're going to talk to me, I'll try and share with you my experience. But I'm not going to tell you where you're supposed to be and what you're supposed to do because I don't know. You know. And I have told people that. And thank God it hasn't screwed anybody up, because I believe we can't make any mistakes if we're trying to come from a loving place. Right? I think in the end it works out. But I think I've thrown some cogs in a lot of people's lives that I don't need to. You know, and it's a growth process and it's a learning experience. And I'm getting better at dealing with people here, right now, with what we're doing. You know? Not trying to live out of last week or trying to live out of things I don't know. I stole everything. You know? Before I came to AA, I'm in an experience right now. I'm going to school, right? I'm trying to become an engineer. And I don't know what that's going to be. It's 2 years down the line, right? Just to give you a comparison, I barely survived through high school. I was drunk every day at school. And so I'm starting with one of those things where you don't have any previous studies, right? I mean, a lot of these guys come in there and they knew what they were going to be, and they're just walking down the hall and I'm going to be an engineer. And they've been studying for 12 years to get there, right? And I didn't pick up that stuff. I mean, there's a lot of things I didn't learn, a lot of things I didn't do because I was drunk all the time. But that's neither here nor there. But anyways, I'm in that situation at school, and what was that all about? I can't remember. It's probably not worth anything anyways. I really can't remember. It may have been a lie. Kim tells me that sometimes. If you can't remember, it's a lie. I don't know how true that is. Anyways, what do I want to say? What else would I like to share? I don't think I want to say any more. I'd like to thank you for being here, and I love you. God bless you.